Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to look at what could be a pending disaster in Tampa Bay from an expired phosphate plant. We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment. Also talk about Matt Gaetz, the congressman who's been allegedly investigated for sex trafficking. We'll talk about that later on in the program. First, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we had an interview with one of the co-authors of the new investigative series in the Tampa Bay Times, Poisoned. It's about high levels of lead exposure for workers at a lead smelting plant in East Tampa. Here's what two listeners had to say following yesterday's show.
This is Sharon from St. Pete. I'm calling regarding the lead story, and I think it's really important for us to maybe change our vocabulary. Regulations are protections. Thanks. That's all I got to say.
This is Jim from Port Richey. I had a comment about the lead processing plant in Tampa. There's more processing plants called smelters in every big city. There's one that I know of because I worked at it, and Johnson & Johnson Controls Battery Plant in Tampa, 5 miles north of the plant that you're talking about. But there's many in every big city, many of them, big and small. But it's contributing to the air and water is the harmful effects of it all. I just wanted to mention that there's more than one.
Well, those are listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, in the last 24 hours, we've learned that wastewater from a phosphate plant near Palmetto is leaking, and Florida environmental officials are allowing the company that runs the phosphate plant to discharge some of the polluted water to Port Manatee on the southern shores of Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay Times is reporting the release of the wastewater is designed to prevent a potential catastrophic failure of wastewater holding ponds. Right now, the phosphate company owners are discharging the polluted wastewater into Piney Point Creek in Manatee County. Wastewater is coming from the Piney Point phosphogypsum stacks. The holding ponds at the Piney Point plant are approaching their limits. The wastewater contains phosphorus and nitrogen, which, if a large amount is released, could cause massive environmental devastation in the waters of Tampa Bay. Glenn Compton is the chair of Manasota 88. That's a longtime environmental group that has been monitoring the phosphate industry for decades. And I spoke with him earlier today about the problems at the Piney Point phosphogypsum plant. Glenn Compton from Manasota 88, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Thank you.
So what's going on at the Piney Point plant in Palmetto?
Piney Point is at a critical level of capacity with holding wastewater. And unfortunately, what has recently happened is that there is a tear in one of the liners, and apparently the tear is at one of the bottoms of the stacks. So in order for the company that owns the stack to repair the liner, they're going to have to empty it out. So we're looking at 400 million gallons of untreated wastewater that's left over from fertilizer production and also from dredging from Port Manatee being discharged into Tampa Bay. The real concern of doing that is that the wastewater will have higher levels of nitrogen and phosphorus than should be discharged. And when that happens, there's a potential that will cause algae blooms, possibly red tide. Red tide's a possibility anywhere in the state of Florida off the coast. That might exacerbate potentially an algal bloom that will have a devastating impact on some very special, unique water bodies in the area.
Has the release already started?
To my knowledge, the release has started. I believe they began yesterday. We're trying to get updates to see exactly how much is being released and if there has been any monitoring of the components that are in the water that are being released into the bay. But at this point, we're not quite sure.
You said 400 million gallons?
400 million gallons is what will have to be emptied out in order for them to get to the tear in the liner, is what the company is saying. HRK Holdings is the owner. They're a limited liability corporation. They took over management of the stack several years ago. But Piney Point just has this history of if there's a problem that can take place at a phosphogypsum stack, it has taken place. And this is just another sad event that has occurred at this stack. Unfortunately, there's no best case scenario here. All the scenarios that can play out are bad. And we're just hoping that the worst case scenario doesn't happen, which would be a total collapse of the earthen dams and the release of all the wastewater at one time. And if you look at the way that the Department of Environmental Protection has issued their emergency order for the owners to release the water, it appears as though the DEP is very concerned that a total collapse of the earthen dam is a possibility. And that's why they've allowed for this emergency release of water into Tampa Bay.
Mm. 400 million gallons, that could cause, as you mentioned at the top of this interview, I imagine that could really disrupt the fish, the seagrass, and all the entire ecosystem of that part of Tampa Bay at the south end of the Skyway.
Yes, and it's unfortunate because there's some very good habitat, some of the best habitat in the state of Florida, some aquatic and marine areas that really should never receive any more pollution because they've received so much pollution from Piney Point from previous releases that have taken place. And also in the vicinity of Port Manatee, seagrass beds have been planted as a result of the dredging that took place in at Port Manatee. There's concern that potentially this would impact some of the seagrass mitigation projects that have occurred there.
Well, we're talking about an impending phosphate wastewater discharge into Tampa Bay with Glenn Compton, who's with Minnesota 88, which is an environmental group, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So, Glenn, this is the dry season. Why would they be worried about a breach or an overflow of these holding ponds at this phosphogypsum stack if we're not getting any rain?
Well, the dry season is about to end, quite frankly, and over the last couple of years, the company has not been able to treat and discharge and evaporate the wastewater that is entering into the stacks by accumulation of rain. And so they've approached the Manatee County Commission within the last couple of months asking for funding to help alleviate the problem. They're predicting that the stacks will be at capacity within 2 to 4 years. And that's given if there's no significant storm event. So it's a good indication that the Piney Point's in at a critical stage here where the stacks were filling up. Now that there has been a leak that has sprung, it remains to be seen whether or not the other stacks that are the other ponds that are at Piney Point will be significantly altered as a result of the discharge that takes place. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But right now, what's occurring is one of the worst-case scenarios that you could possibly imagine, which is really unfortunate. Piney Point should have never been located where it's at. It was located in one of the worst possible places in Florida to locate a phosphogypsum stack. It's adjacent to Tampa Bay. It's subject to storm surge. It's adjacent to Bishop's Harbor and Terracea Aquatic Preserve. And it's just really, really unfortunate that we have another event here that is at critical level and could have a catastrophic impact on the marine and wildlife in the area.
Oh, so give us an idea where it is. I mentioned it's at the south end of the Sunshine Skyway. If people are driving on the Skyway right now or driving up 75 or down 75, where approximately is this if people want to just kind of look around and view it from where they're driving?
If you're traveling on the Skyway and you're heading towards Tampa, then you would look to the right. And that would be the area where Port Manatee is.
Just before you leave Manatee County.
Correct. Yeah, the stacks themselves are visible if you drive US 41 off of and you know they're the largest structures in the area. They're hard to miss, quite frankly.
Glenn, are the phosphate plants still putting wastewater into these holding ponds? Are they still operating and increasing the amount of wastewater in the holding ponds?
No, this is a defunct closed stack. So it's not receiving any more phosphogypsum as a byproduct of the production of fertilizer. But what's happening is these stacks collect rainwater because they're so large, and the rainwater builds up over a period of time, and they have to get rid of it as it builds up. And apparently there's more rainwater entering into the stacks than they can get rid of. So that's why there's a real fear that within a couple of years, the stacks will be completely full and the earthen dams would be breached. Another event that took place that has led to this is that when HRK Holdings purchased the property, they also contracted with Port Manatee to accept some of the dredged material when Port Manatee dredged Berth 12. So they had all this dredged material coming in from Port Manatee. They lined one of the stacks, and they placed the dredged material in the stack. And that was a total disaster because we had a tear as a result of that. And these stacks were never designed to handle dredged material. And the stack that has a rip in it is that same stack that has dredged material from Port Manatee. So not only are we, you know, concerned about the phosphogypsum components being in the wastewater, but also the dredged material and its components that came from Port Manatee.
And that would have things like heavy metals in them.
The real concern, at least on my part, is cadmium, which is extremely toxic in an environment, especially an aquatic marine environment. And it doesn't dissipate. It's something that once it's there, it's pretty much there forever. So that's a real concern. And, you know, let's hope that it's not going to be in the discharge wastewater, but at this point, we really don't know.
Glenn, I wonder what the plan was. I mean, if the owners of this phosphogypsum stack at Piney Point are letting it set there, were they expecting that the wastewater would eventually evaporate and you'd be left with some sludge and they could eventually take care of the sludge? Or what was the plan to make sure that this didn't cause a future problem for Tampa Bay's environment?
Well, they've been trying to get rid of the wastewater through spray evaporation, and apparently they're not able to keep up with the amount of rain that's entering in. Manatee County has agreed to accept 50,000 gallons a day of the wastewater into their utility treatment system, so that will alleviate some of the water that's building up. But again, things have changed. I don't know if that's still going to be done or not at this point. There was talk about treating the wastewater and then discharging it into Bishop's Harbor. That had been talked about. And also, really what the company had pushed for and what Manatee County Commission had agreed was a priority to get rid of the wastewater was to construct a deep well injection system so that they would deep well inject it into the Floridan aquifer. Again, now that things have changed where we're having this complete discharge of one of the stacks, I don't know if any of those options are things that are going to be pursued in the future.
As an environmentalist, would it be a good idea to use deep well injection to get rid of this wastewater?
Well, there's no good solution to the problem. It's trying to figure out what's the least impactive. And so, you know, the choice is do nothing and let the earthen dams collapse and just have total annihilation of everything downstream from that, or discharge into Bishop's Harbor, which has received more pollution from Piney Point than it ever should in its lifetime, or put it on a barge and send it out into the Gulf of Mexico, which was done previously when Piney Point was at a critical level, or to deep well inject it. None of those situations are good. There's no such thing as the best case scenario here. There is no best case. It's trying to avoid the worst case scenario from happening, which would be a complete collapse of the earthen structures of the stack. that's a real possibility, unfortunately.
Yeah, if those earthen structures around the wastewater ponds, if they collapse, are there roads or people, or are there forests? What would be most impacted if the collapse happened?
Well, you most likely see water going across US 41 towards Port Manatee and into Bishop's Harbor. And, you know, we would be talking about a wall of wastewater. So anything in its way would pretty much be annihilated if it were plant or animal life. There are residential properties adjacent to Piney Point, and whether they would be impacted or not, I'm not quite sure. But the real fear is that a total collapse would have a major impact on Bishop's Harbor and Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm. And this plant, if I'm right, they've suffered a collapse of the wall before, right?
Well, they didn't have a collapse of the wall, but they've had breaches and leaks over time. In 2011, one of the lined gypsum stacks had a tear in it, and we were looking at millions of gallons of wastewater going into Bishop's Harbor for a number of weeks. So, yeah, it doesn't have a history that supports that this was a phosphogypsum stack that should have been located where it's at. And the management of it apparently is not being done in such a manner that it's protecting the environment of the surrounding area.
And Glenn, if there was a failure of anybody along the way, was it a failure of regulators? Was it a failure of the company to foresee the problem? Or where does the biggest blame lie, if you could pinpoint that?
Well, the phosphate industry itself is leaving this behind as a legacy. So, you know, first and foremost, I would say the phosphate industry needs to step up and take care of their waste. But we can go all the way back into the 1960s when it was first permitted, where Manatee County Commission approved the land use changes that allowed for the stack to be built. But since that time, it's undergone four bankruptcies. The state Department of Environmental Protection, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, took ownership of it for a while, and they made a huge mistake of selling it to a limited liability corporation, which we're unfortunately finding out can't really manage a phosphogypsum stack so that it's a sound structure over time.
And the taxpayers and the environment are left holding the bag.
That's a real possibility. If we see another bankruptcy of the current owners and they decide to walk away, then that means that the state of Florida or the EPA is going to have to come in and manage the stacks. And that's happened before, and it's cost millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, depending on how long the problem goes on for.
Glenn, will environmentalists be out there at the south end of the Sunshine Skyway to monitor this water as it makes its way into Tampa Bay? And will you raise the alarm with environmental regulators if the damage becomes too great? Or what will you do?
Well, most definitely. Not only are we going to be paying attention to the reports that are submitted to the Department of Environmental Protection, but we're also trying to get third parties to go out and sample the water where at the point of discharge or near the point of discharge to see what's actually happening. So that's in the works.
Glenn, is there anything else that the public needs to know about this situation at Piney Point?
Just that we have to be very careful about what we permit to occur with the phosphate industry. What may be sold to the public as a benefit ends up being a significant cost. And Piney Point certainly shows that the costs of allowing the industry to operate the way that they do in the state of Florida clearly outweigh any benefits that the industry poses or purports to have in the state.
And Glenn, if people want to help out or want to find out more about your group, Manasota 88, how can they do it?
They can find us on the web, manasota88.org. You can sign up for membership there, and we send out a newsletter about once every week or every 2 weeks.
Glenn Compton, thanks a lot. Thanks for spending all this time with us.
Okay, thank you.
That's Glenn Compton, who's chairman of the group Minnesota 88, a longtime environmental group that's been monitoring the phosphate industry for years. And we've been speaking about the potential disaster that's looming at the south end of the Sunshine Skyway Bridge, where the Piney Point plant, the closed phosphate plant, is still holding wastewater from phosphate production. And the dams that hold the wastewater ponds are about to overflow. And some of that water is already leaking into Tampa Bay. It's highly toxic to the environment. And the company is now owned by HRK Holdings. And you can see a really good report in the on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times today, too. If you want to comment, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, send an email to dj@wmnf.org. That was an interview I did with Glenn earlier today. David writes in, I'm amazed at how much the mosaic gypsum stack on US 41 near Riverview is growing. It seems to be growing taller, and it's expanding in size by width and length too, writes David. Are there any state or federal limits in place to limit the size of these stacks? I worry that the growing stack will eventually become a huge environmental problem, much like Piney Point, writes David. Yeah, I don't know if there's any limits once the phosphate company has the right to mine. I don't know if there's any limits on how big that gypsum stack, waste stack, can go. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Carl in Dunedin. Carl, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Ralph. Good morning.
Good morning.
I listened to that. The bottom line is the taxpayers are going to pay for the cleanup. It's not a if, it's a when. You know, they'll make their money, and then they'll drop the mess in the laps of the taxpayers. It happens all over the country. A corrupt, totally corrupt political class allows these companies to operate, allows them to be created, and they get out whatever profit they can out of their polluting business. In New York, they started a nuclear waste processing plant. When things turned ugly, the company went bankrupt, and the taxpayers in New York were on the hook for $1 billion. And, you know, just like the sugar growers in South Florida, you know, this is where, you know, these corrupt people and these corrupt politicians allow just grotesque stuff to go on. And then the taxpayers pay the bill. And anyway.
Yeah, well, Carl, you're right. It's happened over and over again. There are Superfund sites all over the state and all over the country where companies left behind waste that's damaging the environment, and they didn't plan for the cleanup. The companies didn't plan for the cleanup. So what do you think ought to be done? I mean, you talk about corruption, and that may be part of it, but I'm wondering, what do you think we need to do when it comes to companies that process dangerous or hazardous materials? How much regulation do we need?
We need a ton of regulation, but we need the state of Florida, and it's not going to happen. We need the state of Florida to step in immediately to manage that problem. And they're just, you know, the whole LLC thing tells you exactly what's going on in Tallahassee. You know, privatizing, you know, limited government, it's all part of the same problem. It's just, you have to have a political class that doesn't allow businesses to operate profit until they've created a dramatic pollution problem, and then they're allowed to claim bankruptcy, and the taxpayers are left with the bill.
And over and over again, though, we hear from companies that say they're over-regulated. And here's a case where if they weren't able to clean up their waste, they were under-regulated.
Yeah, and you know, they've had huge releases in the past there, and
that's
then
right.
All of a sudden we get a red tide outbreak, and the red tide outbreak that wrapped around Miami and went, you know, they didn't care when it, you know, when it was down by Fort Myers and Sarasota, but you know, when it wrapped around Miami and started heading north, and then the truly rich, you know, started having dead fish floating up, you know, next to their yacht. Then it became a problem. But the state of Florida, shame on them.
All right, Carl. Thanks a lot, Carl.
Anyway,
thank you. All right, great to hear from you. Yeah, Lake Okeechobee, too, is its water levels are rising. And they've had to release some of the polluted toxic water in Lake Okeechobee. Now, Lake Okeechobee's source of pollution is different than the source of pollution at the Piney Point holding ponds, but it still creates similar problems. And red tide is thought to be one of those problems it creates. They release it to the east, towards the Indian River Lagoon, and they release it to the west through the Caloosahatchee and down through Fort Myers. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Larry in Sarasota. Hey, Larry, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Well, Rob, I wanted to ask, is this the same, whatever you want to call, holding tank that got so high they had to have tankers come in where they filled up the tankers, they took it out to the Gulf of Mexico, and they were dumping it like 5 years ago?
Yeah, they were taking barges out, yeah, and Glenn mentioned
right.
that briefly, yeah.
That's right. And, you know, remember a while back ago when the one in the middle, it just busted open in the center and went down over 2,000, 1,000 feet. They said, oh, don't worry about it. The water's not going to affect you. Radioactive water. That was like 2 years ago.
Into the aquifer, yeah.
Yeah, and it's radioactive. I don't understand why the state of Florida, in any way, shape, or form, allows phosphates. And we can't blame it on Republicans alone. It's Republicans and Democrats. We need to have a big movement in Florida to stop it, because who's going to put up enough money to maintain these for the next 5,000 years? And that's how long they're going to sit. Nobody. It's baloney.
Yeah.
Absolute baloney.
All right, Larry, thanks a lot. Thanks for your points.
Well.
All right, good to hear from you. Stephen writes in, can they cover these storage facilities with tarps, I guess Stephen is saying, and direct the rainwater away? That's an interesting idea. I don't know, and we might do another program about this soon. Dennis writes this regarding phosphate. Dennis writes in to say, I'm wondering whether wide publication of the full names and addresses of the corporate officers and directors of the phosphate companies that have created this debacle might be beneficial. Public shaming might motivate them to do better in the best of all possible worlds, writes Dennis. Let's go to Ron in West Tampa. Hey, Ron, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but I, you know, having lived in Florida, I remember when the first gypsum stack went up, and it was like Florida got its first mountain, not willfully. And then when people started to learn about it over the years, one of the first things I learned about is phosphate is a very political chemical. Most of the phosphate that the United States gets, I think 25% of it comes from Florida. And I think if you look at the world stage as far as phosphate production, you'd have to go all the way to Morocco to find, if I'm wrong, then my bad. But I think Morocco, of all places, is another big player in the phosphate world. And only to add to what other callers are saying, Rob, I mean, I remember that spill in the Alifai River. I think it was probably more than 20 years ago, and there was a severe outbreak of fish kills, chemical pollutants. The benthic layer was basically rendered sterile for some time, and I'm not sure of the overall effect long term. But you know, phosphoric acid is one of the wonderful things that goes into some so-called soft drinks. If you look at the label of a can of a certain red colored soda, cola, you'll see phosphoric acid there. So I felt, only by some strange and wonderful miracle would we be able to transport this water to another facility, have it deacidified, and then slowly reintroduced into some kind of accommodating water body like our bay. But that would be the most benign form of an imperfect system. Other than that, these phosphate stacks seem to be, or these gypsum stacks seem to be growing. If you drive down State Road 60, headed to the other coast, that's all you see. And I don't know how much labor it would take to channel that water, like one of your other contributors said, but it would be a monumental effort because these things are hundreds of feet high and there's hundreds of thousands of tons of this fossil gypsum tailing waste sitting there. So, I mean, if anything needs to be done to Florida to clean it up, we need to focus on the phosphate stacks. So that's my two cents.
All right, Ron, thanks a lot. I'm not sure there's anything good that we can do with the water. I mean, I think there's all sorts of problems with that water that you can't turn it into a drinkable substance.
Right.
Yeah, Ron, thanks a lot. Thanks. Great to hear from you. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and let's go to Libby, who's in Palm Harbor. Libby, thanks for calling in.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment on what I saw, the headline in the St. Pete, in the Tampa Bay Times, and then you're doing the show on it about the proposed runoff of this water from phosphate, is it?
Yeah, it's already leaking, and now the danger is that the company may have to let more leak into the Piney Point Creek and then into Tampa Bay.
Well, my question is this. Is this company that is still functional is not bankrupt. Can't the state of Florida sue them to take care of it in some other way or some way that is more or less better than running it into our...
Well, I think you probably could if you had an aggressive attorney general who was on the side of the environment and consumers. I don't think currently we have an aggressive attorney general, at least who's on the side of the environment and consumers.
Yeah. Well, I'm very much an environmentalist, and I'm not quite over the fact that 2 years ago or 3 years ago when they did the big ag runoff from probably the sugar things, and we lost like 400 brown pelicans on the East Coast. And I think your earlier caller that mentioned the red tide is aggravated by this toxic substances being put in the water. I mean, why the manatee kill off this year? All of a sudden we have 400 manatees dead, you know, like 200 more than would normally be dead. They're not all boat injuries. I just can't believe we're letting industry poison our beautiful waters around Tampa Bay. It's a shame.
It is. It's why we live here, too. Libby, thanks a lot. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
All right.
Thanks for your show.
Thank you
Bye-bye.
For saying that. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We'll go back to the phones in just a few minutes, but I want to mention a few other items that are in the news. A man has been convicted of setting fire to a sporting goods store in a shopping center in North Tampa near USF during the unrest that followed the protests over the death of George Floyd last year. Court records show that 20-year-old Terrence Lee Hester Jr. pleaded guilty yesterday in federal court in Tampa to damaging or destroying by fire a building used in interstate commerce. He faces between 5 and 20 years in prison. Officials say surveillance video shows Hester throwing a flaming piece of cloth into the Champs sports store in North Tampa through a broken window last May. The damage to the store and other businesses in the plaza was estimated at more than $1 million. And in related news, an Army reservist and a Marine veteran is suing the city of Tampa for injuries that he suffered when Tampa police fired a rubber bullet at his head last year during the George Floyd protests. The Tampa Bay Times reports that 25-year-old Jordan Corey was in a crowd of hundreds marching through downtown Tampa on May 31st, praying, crying, and protesting at Tampa police officers while demanding justice for George Floyd. Cell phone video shows one police officer firing off rubber bullets, sparking an explosion of chaos as hundreds of people ran for cover. Corey, who is an Army reservist, was in the park with his girlfriend, trying to help fellow protesters find safety, he says in the lawsuit. Then one of the bullets struck the back of his head, drilling a small hole through his skull and sending him to the ground, vomiting. Filed earlier this month, the lawsuit accuses the city of Tampa of negligence and excessive force against a crowd it describes as peaceful protesters. Corey is seeking money from the city for damages and for medical treatment of what he describes as traumatic brain injury. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, a prominent conservative and close ally of former President Donald Trump, says he's being investigated by the Justice Department for sex trafficking charges, but he denies any wrongdoing. He was on the Tucker Carlson show last night on Fox News, and he defended himself And at one point, he claimed that a part of the plot included an offer of a pardon from President Joe Biden in exchange for paying his extortionist $25 million. At one point during the interview, Gates tells Tucker Carlson that Tucker had met a woman that Gates had in tow at dinner. And Gates says, "You'll remember her." And he insisted that he claimed the woman was later threatened by the FBI. Let's listen to a little bit of the exchange between Tucker Carlson and Matt Gaetz, the congressman from the Panhandle, who's now being investigated for sex trafficking, according to the New York Times.
I do believe that there are people at the Department of Justice who are trying to smear me, providing for flights and hotel rooms for people that you're dating who are of legal age is not a crime. And I'm just troubled that the lack of any sort of legitimate investigation into me would then convert into this extortion attempt.
I don't remember the woman you're speaking of or the context at all, honestly. But I would like to know who. So they're saying there is a 17-year-old girl who you had a relationship with. Is that true? And who are they? Who is this girl? What are they talking about at the New York Times?
The person doesn't exist. I have not had a relationship with a 17-year-old. That is totally false. The allegation, as I read it in the New York Times, is that I've traveled with some 17-year-old in some relationship. That is false, and records will bear that out to be false.
How long has this investigation been going on, do you know?
I don't know.
When were you first informed of it?
I really saw this as a deeply troubling challenge for my family on March 16th when people were, talking about a minor and that there were pictures of me with child prostitutes. That's obviously false. There will be no such pictures because no such thing happened. But really on March 16th was when this got going from the extortion standpoint.
So what happens next? I mean, you can say there is this investigation, I guess a criminal investigation. I'm not quite sure where the sex trafficking part comes in. For the fifth time, I don't really understand this story very well. But where does it go from here? I mean, you've made an allegation against someone by name on the air and accused him of trying to extort millions of dollars from your family. What happens tomorrow?
Well, what was supposed to happen was the transfer of this money that would have implicated the former colleague of these current DOJ officials. But that's obviously not going to happen tomorrow because the New York Times story was leaked in order to quell that investigative effort. So here's what needs to happen next. The FBI and the Department of Justice must release the tapes that are in their possession that were done at their direction. Those tapes will show that I am innocent and that the whole concept of sex charges against me was really just a way to try to bleed my family out of money and probably smear my name because I am a well-known, outspoken conservative, and I guess that's out of style in a lot of parts of the country right now.
Matt Gaetz, I appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thanks for giving me the chance to tell the truth, Tucker. I appreciate it.
It's a more interesting and complicated story than I knew from reading about it. Thank you very much. Matt Gaetz interview, that was one of the weirdest interviews I've ever conducted. That story just appeared in the news a couple of hours ago. And on the certainty that there's always more than you read in the newspaper, we immediately called Matt Gaetz and asked him to come on and tell us more, which, as you saw, he did. I don't think that clarified much.
So that was Tucker Carlson interviewing North Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz last night on the news that Gaetz is being investigated for sex trafficking involving a 17-year-old woman. And Rachel Maddow had something to say about that, and we're going to hear that in a moment. I'm going to read some of these emails that have come in. Peter writes, "I remember in the past we were planting sea oats and indigenous plants and maybe growing oysters or mussels in Tampa Bay to help bring back a stable ocean environment. Do you know, Rob, or your listeners, if this process is still going on?" Yes. There's a huge effort to replant seagrass, and they have tried to plant some shellfish in Tampa Bay and the surrounding waters. Absolutely, that is still going on. And then Gary writes regarding this corporate limited liability. When corporations were first created as legal entities, their shareholders were personally liable for the acts of the corporation. Over time, this has flipped 180 degrees, and now shareholders aren't personally liable for the acts of the corporation, so they leave their messes behind without consequences when the company files bankruptcy. So polluters escape, but students who default on their student loans can't discharge their debts in bankruptcy. Follow the money, writes Gary. Gary, that's a great point. Thanks for making it. And then here's an email from Steve in St. Pete. I would suggest a temporary cofferdam in the retention pond that a repair might be effected without the need to completely empty the pond to get at the stricken liner, writes Steve in St. Pete. Steve, thank you for that. Well, we were talking about Matt Gaetz. Last night, Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. I should say that, you know, of course, you can see these interviews on the each cable news show's website. But Rachel Maddow tried to explain the Matt Gaetz sex trafficking story to a big story in Orange County in the Orlando area regarding their former tax collector. So let's listen to Rachel's explanation of what's going on with Matt Gaetz. And she started by looking into a big scandal involving the tax collector in Orange County, or right next to us, in Seminole County, rather. And let's listen to Rachel's explanation.
Let's start where I think the story starts. I will stand corrected if it starts somewhere deeper and weirder than this. But for now, as far as we understand it, the story starts in Seminole County, Florida. So Seminole County, Central Florida, Orlando metro area, northeast from there out towards the Space Coast. For reasons unknown to man, in Seminole County in the 2016 election, Seminole County voters, in their infinite wisdom, decided that they would replace their county tax collector with this young man. 31 years old at the time he was elected, no prior record of public service. And we now know from audits and investigations that he really hit the ground running as soon as he won that office in 2016 and was sworn in 2017. One little glimpse of how this is going. This guy, as I said, young man, first time in public service, he was 31 years old and he was elected. He had just been married a couple of months before he was elected. He was married in mid-2016. After he won the election in November 2016 and got sworn in early 2017, he apparently hired and started to pay with public funds six different people who had been part of his wedding party the previous year. I'm not sure that's how you're supposed to staff up the tax collector's office. An Orlando Sentinel investigation found that he issued $1.9 million in contracts from his office to people who were his own close friends and business partners. Again, this is the tax collector's office. A county audit later found that for some reason, within months of taking office, he also started spending public money for that office on guns and ammunition and body armor and drones. The tax collector's office in Seminole County, Florida needs drones? Okay. Also, by June 2017, so he's still only in office a few months, he proclaimed that he and his employees in the county tax collector's office would henceforth all be carrying guns. He wanted them to wear their guns at work to go along with their tax collector's office badges. This is like the office that collects license fees and stuff. This is not like some SWAT team agency with frontline Wyatt Earps out there defending the streets. But the new guy elected that office after hiring all his groomsmen to come in and run the place, buys all these guns and body armor and ammo and drones, tells everybody in the office they all need to wear guns at work to go along with their badges. Why did he want that? I don't know for sure, but within a few short months, he personally had pulled over a woman driving who he decided might have been speeding. But it gets better. There's also the part where while working full-time as the elected tax collector for that county, he set up a for-profit business inside the tax collector's office to do blockchain something something. What was the company actually going to do? It does not matter. He set up his own private for-profit company, running it from inside the county tax collector's office. And in setting up that private for-profit company, he decided he needed $65,000 in brand new computer servers to run his new private company. And then he billed the county for those computer servers. And just to put some icing on this particular part of the cake, the audit in the county later found that he was such a genius at this stuff that when he installed those servers that he billed to the taxpayers, when he installed those servers for the private company he was going to run out of the tax collector's office, he installed them wrong and thereby set the office on fire. Ta-da! So, Seminole County, Florida, congratulations on your excellent choice for a new public official in the 2016 elections. Along the way, the Orlando Sentinel reported on his frequent anti-Muslim social media posts and his posts posing with far-right white nationalist types. He ended up posting things online about his friendship with President Trump's longtime political advisor and convicted felon, Roger Stone, who you see on the left side of your screen there, as well as the Trumpiest of all Trumpy Republican congressmen, who you see in the center there, Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz. But where things get that rough for the Seminole County tax collector is June of last year. Federal agents come to his house to arrest him for, among other things, allegedly stalking a local man who was going to run against him for county tax collector. Yeah, how dare anyone run against him for tax collector when our hero was doing such a great job in that office? Have you seen the way they wear their guns now? To try to derail his potential opponent's campaign, the tax collector guy, according to prosecutors, arranged for a false rape accusation to be made against the man, which was then sent to the school at which the guy worked. The same allegation was then hyped and circulated by a network of fake identity social media bots and accounts, apparently controlled by a local guy from the Proud Boys and associated with Roger Stone. Prosecutors say the tax collector guy also created a fake Twitter account in the name of the guy who was running against him, and then he falsely posted things on that Twitter account in which he was claiming to be the guy running against him and also claiming to be a proud segregationist and a white supremacist. But it was all fake. It was the tax collector guy who set up this Twitter account. It was a hit job. All set up by our hero, the armed-to-the-teeth, fire-setting, wedding-party-hiring tax collector of Seminole County. So federal agents show up at his house last summer to arrest him on these stalking charges. And things get worse from there, because what do they find when they come to arrest him at his house? I will read it to you directly from the Orlando Sentinel at the time. Quote, the day he was indicted for stalking a political rival, Joel Greenberg had several stolen IDs in his work vehicle, a pair of fake IDs in his wallet, and materials for making more in his office. Evidence he was regularly abusing his position to steal unwitting constituents' identities, according to federal authorities. Inside the tax collector's work vehicle, agents found his backpack, which held three licenses from Canada, Virginia, and Florida, belonging to Seminole County residents who had recently obtained new Florida licenses. Employees of the tax collector's office told agents they'd seen Greenberg taking surrendered licenses from the agency's shred basket prior to their destruction. Do you have any idea how many things could go wrong all at once if you just elected the wrong guy, tax collector of all things? Who knew what mischief could be made out of a single job like that? But that Orlando Sentinel headline about him stealing people's IDs, allegedly, through his last day in office, that ran in the Orlando Sentinel in July. By the following month, by August, federal officials had gone through the computers and electronic devices that they had seized from him during that arrest. And what they found, according to prosecutors, on those electronic devices and computers would yield even darker headlines by the following month, plus a superseding federal indictment for him. By August of last year, this was the headline in the Orlando Sentinel. Former Seminole tax collector Joel Greenberg facing sex trafficking charges? Quote, Joel Greenberg is facing sex trafficking charges related to a girl between the ages of 14 and 17 and is also accused of illegally using a state database to look up information about the girl and other people with whom he was engaged in, quote, sugar daddy relationships, according to an indictment filed Friday by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Quote, the former Seminole County tax collector used his access as an elected official to a state database to look up information about the minor victim. The database in question is the Florida Driver and Vehicle Information Database. He allegedly looked up information about the girl in that database, including her photo and her driver ID number. He also, according to the indictment, used the database to look up other people with whom he was, quote, engaged in sugar daddy relationships. That's the phrase that's used in the indictment. The Orlando Sentinel helpfully points out, quote, a sugar daddy is a term that refers to a wealthy man who dates a younger woman and gives her gifts in exchange for companionship or sex. Again, the alleged victim here is a teenage girl. Per the Orlando Sentinel, quote, Greenberg used the state database for prohibited purposes, including to produce a false identification document and to facilitate his efforts to engage in commercial sex acts. Now, the tax collector guy did quit his job after he was arrested. He has pled not guilty to all of the 14 federal charges he's now facing, including the sex trafficking of a child charges. He was out on bail after he was charged last summer, but last month, the judge overseeing his case jailed him for violating the terms of his bail. So he is now in jail, and he is scheduled to go on trial in Florida in June. So, I know, happy Tuesday. Blech, this exists. I'm sorry. But now, tonight, on the front page of the New York Times, we get the national kick in the teeth that comes with this story. This is the headline tonight on the front page of the Times. Quote, Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is said to be investigated over possible sexual relationship with girl age 17. Quote, Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican of Florida and a close ally of former President Donald J. Trump, is being investigated by the U.S. Justice Department over whether he had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old and paid for her to travel with him, according to three people briefed on the matter. Investigators are examining whether Congressman Gaetz violated federal sex trafficking laws. A variety of federal statutes make it illegal to induce someone under the age of 18 to travel over state lines to engage in sex in exchange for money or something of value. The U.S. Justice Department regularly prosecutes such cases, and offenders often receive severe sentences. It was not clear how Congressman Gaetz met the girl, believed to be 17 at the time of encounters about 2 years ago, that investigators are scrutinizing. The investigation was opened in the final months of the Trump administration under Attorney General William Barr. Given Congressman Gaetz's national profile, this is interesting, senior Justice Department officials in D.C., including some appointed by President Trump, were notified of the Gaetz investigation. Three people familiar with the probe said the examination of Congressman Gaetz is part of a broader investigation into a political ally of his, a local official in Florida named Joel Greenberg, the Seminole County tax collector, who was indicted last summer on an array of charges, including sex trafficking of a child and financially supporting people in exchange for sex, at least one of whom was an underage girl. Mr. Greenberg, who has since resigned his post as tax collector in Seminole County, visited the White House with Congressman Gaetz in 2019, according to a photograph that Mr. Greenberg posted on Twitter.
All right, so Rachel Maddow last night on MSNBC connecting the scandal in Seminole County regarding their former tax collector, Joel Greenberg, who allegedly did a host of dumb and illegal things, with the investigation to Matt Gaetz and possible sex trafficking by Matt Gaetz. You can see that entire piece on the MSNBC.com website. Interesting stuff. You also heard Matt Gaetz himself earlier. Dennis writes this regarding phosphate. One of the things I liked to do when I was in active practice was whenever I had a claim against a corporate actor for injurious actions was to seek out each member of the corporate hierarchy that was in the chain of command. That resulted in the injury and named them as individual defendants. Corporate officers are not immune from suit or liability for their own personal actions that result in injury or loss to someone else. Also in law school property class, we were taught that the landowner is strictly liable for damages caused to persons or property outside of the defendant's property resulting from hazardous actions taken upon the defendant's property. That's a Dennis who is giving us a legal perspective on the phosphate industry problem. Dave in Clearwater writes, the wastewater from the phosphate mining can probably be cleaned up. It's just not economically feasible. They could also build evaporation ponds with some means of keeping out more water. Again, a major economic investment, writes Dave in Clearwater. Well, thanks to Jessica Green. She's been our phone producer today. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for the news. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Right after the news, we're hoping to hear from NOLA on the Midpoint program. This is your community radio station. Here's the news.